Hey there, and welcome back to the show with me, your host, Brett Horse. I hope you've been doing well and enjoying the last couple of episodes. I do have some pretty awesome episodes coming up in the next few weeks, which I cannot wait to release. But anyway, I won't say much more than that. Before we hop into today's show, I do have a couple of announcements to make and just wanted to sort of bring your attention to some things that are coming up and that are currently going on. The first one is a live webinar that I will be doing on Tuesday, the 29th of May. That's 7:30 p.m. EST. You can check out all of the details in the show notes. It is called Fix Your Gut and Save Your Life. And we're going to dive into how to improve your digestion and as a knock-on effect, potentially help to remedy some other situations that are all tied in. Spoiler alert, pretty much all disease, dare I say all, can be traced back to your gut. So fixing that has huge implications for your overall health. And I will just say this, for those of you that are listening that are practitioners, that are really well-versed in digestive health and natural medicine, this is perhaps not the webinar for you. But if you want to fix your digestion, if you are a patient, if you are someone who is just sort of dipping your toe in the water, I think that you will learn a lot on that webinar. And I will also be sharing some of the tools and strategies that I've used with my clients and give you access to that as well. So definitely show up for that. That's Tuesday, 29th of May. June 7th, I know we're still a little bit away and I will make this announcement again, but I will be co-hosting an evening with the director, producer, and filmmaker for the film Modified, which is has won numerous awards on the international indie film circuit and is basically all about genetically modified organisms. So that'll be coming up June 7th. That is in Toronto. So that'll be a live event in person. And again, as we get a little closer to that, I will throw some links in the show notes. But of course, you know, if you're not following me on Facebook, that's a good place to keep up to date with what's going on. I also wanted to bring one thing to your attention as well. And that is, you know, some of you might already know this, but I have started up something called Superfood Revival. And Superfood Revival is really... It's a venture that is done somewhat jointly with Purium Health Products from the US, but it's really all about superfoods and optimizing your health using many of the products, tools, strategies, etc. that I've used on well over 1,100 people in my clinic now. So I invite you to join that group, which is Superfood Revival Community. And you can look that up on Facebook. I will also be putting a link directly to that in the show notes. And totally free to join, but I encourage you to join me in there and learn about the wonders and benefits of superfoods and how you can help yourself and your health. Right, so today's show. I went back and forth on the show as to whether I should release this. Today's show is actually an interview that I did for someone else. So in other words, I was being interviewed as part of a series called Divinely You with my friend Jack Childs, who's based in the UK. And I debated whether I should release this on my podcast, whether I should release it at all, because it's pretty raw. And when I say raw, I just mean raw in a sense of me being open and honest about spirituality, about rooting spirituality and bringing that into the modern world, how to apply that in your own life, and just my thoughts and musings on holistic health, spirituality, and where we are headed. So I don't want to say much more than that. I would love to hear your feedback on this episode, particularly if you are joining us online. Give me a shout out in the comment section. And you know, this is really me just opening right up. So again, I did sort of show this to a few people beforehand and let them listen to it. And I said, you know, is this something I should release? And the verdict was yes. And I know many of you have asked me for more spiritual teachings on the podcast. And so hopefully this will be the beginning of a few more to come. I won't tell you who else is coming on the show, but I definitely have some people in that vein who will be who will be making an appearance. So anyway, without further ado, let's just hop into today's show. And of course, as always, if you do like the show, subscribe, share, and leave a review. And I would like your feedback on this one, just to know where I'm at and what you think of this. So enjoy today's show. Thanks for listening.
So first of all, Brett, thank you very much for coming on. A lot of people have different approaches to health. Some people are very focused on their body. Some people can be quite focused on their mind. Can you just talk a little bit about your background and what you've discovered in terms of helping people with their health?
Yeah, so I mean, thanks obviously for having me, Jack. It's great to be here. And you know, I guess I'll sort of wind the clock back a little bit for my own sort of journey. For me, I started tapping into more of the spiritual side of things, which was actually through music, you know, ironically enough. And so I originally started out, I have a sound engineering background. I traveled all over the world playing music. And for me, the power of sound and watching what sound and vibration did to people, and then the music having sort of spiritual overtones, that sort of like really nudged me towards more of the spiritual side of things. And it was actually only quite a bit later, I would say probably 5-6 years later, that I then started getting into more of the physical health. And of course now, you know, I've sort of gone quite far in all of those directions. So I've lived with a lot of indigenous cultures around the world. You know, and spend a lot of time sort of, you know, just sort of soaking up what they're about, from creation stories to, you know, their philosophies surrounding life and health and all of that. And then, you know, going the complete other side of things, where now, you know, doing things like functional medicine, holistic nutrition. And, you know, I mean, functional medicine itself is like super sciencey. And it's sort of like the bridge, if you will, where we're using like cutting edge lab testing, but then we're sort of treating what's going on with natural medicine. And so I find that, you know, I've worked, I apprenticed with an energy medicine doctor as well, like a world renowned doctor who is actually a PhD psychologist. And so I interned with her and I apprenticed with her in her clinic for a year. And so I learned a lot about energy psychology, Vedic psychology, and stuff like that. So, you know, for me, I just find that I guess I have areas that I would really consider myself an expert in. And then there's other areas where I'm not necessarily an expert, but I know a lot and I know enough to be able to go there with the people that I'm trying to help. And so my sort of my approach these days is really, you know, the way I look at it is having a very, very wide toolkit, right? So I've got a toolkit that just has all of these tools that I can possibly draw on. And it really depends what kind of medicine you need today. And so it's kind of odd. It took me a while to get into that, because I noticed when I first started doing that, people would come and see me and they'd go, right, I'm here for nutrition. And then we start talking. And I'm like, well, you're not really here for nutrition today, because you kind of have it figured out. You're actually here for me to shift the way that you're thinking about things, or your perception. Or, you know, so that's kind of where I'm at these days, you know, in terms of my own practice. And just a little bit of background there in history, so you get a sense of where I'm at.
And do you find people are over-focused on one element of health generally?
You know, it's interesting. I think that people are starting to embrace the holistic side of things a little bit more. But, you know, I guess I can only speak from my own experience. And from my own experience, because of the world that I live in, you know, not many people are branding themselves as a spiritual healer or a shaman. You know, you don't set up a business and say, hey, I'm a shaman. You know, here we go. You know, 1-800-SHAMAN. Yeah. Like, people are not really doing that, right? But if you're a nutritionist, or you're a functional medicine practitioner, or you're, you know, that people sort of, the mainstream anyway, sort of goes, okay, great. You know, you are a doctor, and that's why I'm coming to see you. So I find that To answer your question, I think most people are still largely focused on the physical side of things.
Yeah.
And typically what they're going to do for their spiritual health is they're going to get into things like meditation, you know, possibly yoga meditation. They might read books. Perhaps they'll go to conscious gatherings, you know, ecstatic dance and stuff like that. But I find that, as far as I'm concerned, I think that a lot of that is largely segmented in a way. Where I've always said this, you know, I've always said that I find that, you know, what we've done with holistic health, like, you know, if you wind the clock back to traditional cultures, and, you know, talking about shamanism, the shaman would be the hunter. The shaman would understand about the spiritual aspects. The shaman would understand about food, would understand about herbs. So the shaman was really, you know, had this like huge role that encompassed all things health related. And really what we've done in a modern context, and modern medicine is absolutely the worst for this in many ways, where we've compartmentalized everything so much that no one really understands. You know, we have the priest or the pastor or the guru, depending on which, you know, faith you're following.
Yeah.
And that they're there for the spiritual guidance. And then you have a psychotherapist or psychiatrist or psychologist to help you with the mental health side of things. And then you have your doctor, your nutritionist, your dietitian, and so on for the physical side. And, of course, in Reiki, massage therapist. So that's where you have the physical side of things. And a lot of people, you know, and this is not really bashing anyone, but it's just where we're at. And people don't know about the other aspects, right? And I think that, you know, from a practice side of things, I think more people are starting to come around to that as practitioners.
Yeah,
and we're really starting to tap into the powerful effects that emotional and mental health play in physical health. And, you know, I think at the moment, the way that I see it is the spiritual aspect is still a little bit out there for most folks.
Yeah, it's almost
in terms of seeking help with that, like actually going to see someone for help. You're probably just going to do a lot of self-investigation and learning and stuff like that in the modern context. Or you're going to go to church or something like that.
Yeah, I could definitely resonate with that in my experience. Like for me, it started with very much a focus on my body, like what can I do in my diet, etc., to get really healthy. And then it became a little bit more psychological, like looking at my mind. And then eventually it went into a deeper spiritual journey. Do you view them... So if I'm a person coming ill, and I come to you for help, would you always encourage them to look at all aspects then? Or would you try and start
I think as much as I would say I would love to do that, you know, truth be told, I think that some people are not necessarily open.
Okay, yeah.
They haven't really thought about it yet, you know, and so you can't really force these types of issues. You know, back in the day, I was just a little bit more... I guess cowboy styles, in a sense, where I'm like, right, this is the way to do it, and this I just got to download you with all the stuff, and I would find that for some people it would really trigger some pretty serious stuff in them, and then I wasn't sure, you know, I was much younger, obviously, and I wasn't sure what to do with it, and so some people would get really upset, you know, when you start saying, hey, I think that your relationship is at the root of all of your health issues, and they'd be like, what the hell, like how can you tell me that my marriage is causing all these problems, like who the hell are you, you know, so. You know, so I think the way that I approach it now is that I really just say to people, you know, this is holistic health, and we might have to get into some of the stuff, but I'm comfortable if you're comfortable, but if you're not comfortable, we don't have to go there. Because, you know, the more you work with people, the more comfortable they become with you. I find people are just very, I don't know what it is, perhaps it's just my gifts and whatnot, but people just are very open with me. Like they typically tell me things that they wouldn't tell anyone else. So I personally don't really have as much of a problem, but I definitely know that for general practitioners out there to really start scratching away at the layers of the onion, not everyone's open to that. You know, they're not ready for that. I did want to mention something though, which I think is important to sort of point out. And it's one thing I learned a long time ago, and the sort of sages and mystics have been saying this for thousands of years, And we're starting to now sort of unravel a bit of this with, you know, the world of quantum physics, you know, it, like effects of vibration on water molecules and so on and so on. And, you know, it's important. The way I look at holistic health is consciousness flows into thought, mm-hmm. thought flows into emotion, and then emotion flows down into the physical.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really, you know, it's really important for folks to understand that you can't separate any of those.
Yeah.
They don't exist independent of each other. And when you look at the system that we're working in, everything is independent of each other.
Mm.
You know, so there's a bit of a disconnect there. But I find that, you know, working in the energy medicine clinic was just some days were just like absolutely mind blowing because we'd have people come in and, you know, people with 20 years of back pain. And they've traveled the world seeing the best chiropractors and massage therapists and whatever. And then we get them on the table and we realize that it's actually like this emotional blockage.
Mm.
And then using kinesiology and essential oils to tap into the sort of reptilian brain, if you will, and unlock those emotional blockages, people would get up off the table and they would have no back pain anymore. And it's like we didn't even touch them. You know, I did nothing to your back whatsoever. And so having those types of experiences and observing them was really confirmation for me that a lot of what we know about the flow of consciousness into physical reality, I saw it, you know, and I've seen it with my own eyes and I continue to see it.
Mm.
You know, I mean, you think about in a modern context, right? Like how many people will tell you that when they leave their job or when they leave the stressful relationship or when they change their environment that they're in,
they feel so much.
All of a sudden everything changes, yeah. Right? Physical health, they're like, well, I feel lighter. I feel like I have more energy. I don't feel as stressed out anymore. And, you know, so it makes sense. And I think people really need to start looking at that more from a holistic perspective.
Interesting your experience, because I know in mine, it's a really nice way how you sort of gave the four layers, but also said how they are interlinked. But
so the,
keep going. Yeah.
Yeah. So the consciousness into thought,
into emotions,
into the physical. Yeah.
In your experience, because it's just in mind, because I've like helped people on the different layers, but my work is really focused on the consciousness level.
Yeah.
Do you find that you can get bigger results by focusing on that level if it's appropriate for the person? Because how I understand it, almost that's the deepest level. And then everything flows up from there. It's all interlinked, but if you can go deeper, it flows up and can give you bigger results.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you can't really, again, I wouldn't try and definitively, you know, prioritize everything among everyone, right? I mean, you can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
And the only reason why I say that, you're correct and you're also incorrect. Because it's going to differ from person to person. And I mean, this is another tenet of holistic medicine, is that instead of treating the disease, we're actually treating the person.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, I always ask this question, I'm not interested in what you have, I want to know why you have it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, so you'll find that same diseases actually have different root causes, they have different, you know, one might be more psychologically driven than spiritually driven.
I understand.
You know, of course, that's where it's come from. But does it mean that we need to just go right to the source and tap into that, especially in a clinical setting? I'm not sure. If people are open to it, 100%. But you know, important to also mention here, and this is the way I approach things, is, you know, if you think about it like this, right? So I've got my spiritual self, I've got my mental emotional self, and then I've got my physical self, right? Yeah. And if you come along and you shift any one of those forward, without supporting the other ones,
it's going to be out.
You're still out of balance, right? Mm-hmm. And so you actually need to, and this can be done very subtly. I mean, you know, oftentimes I find that for myself, we're not sitting there getting into mantras and chants and whatnot about spirituality. Sometimes it's actually just speaking to the person and, you know, highlighting certain things and changing your perception and then supporting the physical. And that really shifts people forward.
Mm.
So I think, you know, it doesn't have to be this big affair. Mm. You know, I've always said spirit whispers, spirit doesn't shout.
Yeah.
And you know, a lot of people are waiting for this big lightning bolt to come out the sky. And most people don't have that experience.
Mm.
You actually have to be really quiet to listen to that. And I find that, you know, coming so far down the road with helping others, I found that sometimes it's just the words and it's just the way that you say things to people, and you give them a couple of practical tools to work with, and that's, you know, that's a game changer for them.
So I suppose it's always looking at what the individual needs rather than saying, no, that's the biggest level. It's a very much a individualized approach, and I suppose it's all depending on what the person's willing to accept. So I don't know if this is in your experience, but a lot of the time it's almost like a lot more happens than the person realizes and is conscious of, but you have to deliver it in a way which, like, words can be so healing. It's almost like stuff can happen, like, it can be an energy exchange maybe, but like, it's just the words.
Well, again, it's the vibration, right? Yeah. So, you know, I mean, Masaru Emoto, the famous Japanese scientist, I mean, this was groundbreaking research where he photographed molecules of water under a microscope. And he said bad things to them, and he said stressful things to them, and then he said beautiful things to them, and he had labels on all the water, and he just photographed it all. And, you know, I mean, the sort of key takeaway from the whole of all of his experiments was that the power of your intentions will ultimately ripple down in through your entire body, through the entire universe, if you want, and will affect the way that your molecules and your cells and your water in your body actually work and actually look. You know, this is why you look at people that are in stressful living situations, that don't have healthy relationships, that have poor coping mechanisms, that are very stressed out. I mean, you know, you get someone who's 40 years old and they look like they're 60. Why is that? You know, because that negativity is actually just accelerating their aging, like it's degrading their body in a sense, and that's the physical ramification. But of course, we know from a mental, you know, spiritual side of things, you're essentially remaining prisoner without ever fully spiritually evolving, because you're kept in that confined environment, right? So yeah, I mean, there's lots to consider, and I think not everyone is ready to dive into that sort of stuff.
Cool.
It's a lot. I mean, it's your whole life, it's your whole being, right?
Yeah, this is breaking a lot of belief systems, and it takes time for
it. And also what you've been told, I mean, your belief system is what you believe about yourself, but your belief systems are also reinforced by your environment.
Of course.
You know, and now, of course, with social media being as big as it is, you know, we find a lot of people are stuck in their own echo chamber, where, you know, news feeds and advertising online and everything is hyper-targeted to your belief system. So, you know, if you click on certain things, you're going to start seeing more of those things. And the more you click on them, the more you see them, so you don't get to see all the other stuff. So, so, you know, and then, of course, if you're then also in the same, and I don't want to say this in a bad way, but oftentimes your friends and your family members will now also reinforce those beliefs, and they'll actually prevent you from growing, because they're going to keep on saying, hey, you're this or you're that. And you're starting to sort of like dive into the spiritual stuff and go, no, I'm not actually like, I see that I'm actually that. And they're saying, no, you're not. And so it's difficult for a lot of people. I mean, I was blessed personally. I left home when I was around 17, and I joined the military. So I was in the special forces, you know, joined the military and whatnot, not for very long, but, I've always remained close with my parents, but I've never really lived at home after that. And then, you know, we're talking now 20 years ago, I literally left the country, and I go back periodically. But, you know, just shifting that environment and being out there so much and traveling so much, you really are able to then form your own identity. And part of that is recreating yourself, and the other part of it is discovering who you really are. Which is kind of cool. But not everyone has the luxury of doing that, right? This is why travel is so good. Because it really broadens your mind. And of course, you also get to see how other people live, which is important in this day and age.
It's definitely something I want to tap into later in the interview about, like, developing ourselves. You just talked about belief systems a lot. Like, for me, like, I've sort of seen both sides of it. I've had like quite a profound spiritual awakening, and I do a lot of alternative healing work with people. It's my main form of work. But then I've also been through university and I got a first-class science degree. So I've seen both sides. Where do you see the role of science in health and the limitations of it? Because it's an interesting topic.
It is an interesting topic, and I'll probably ruffle some feathers with what I'm about to say. I mean, here's the thing. Like, I love science. Mm. I look at science all the time, and I find that when I'm looking at purely objective science, it's amazing.
Mm.
The problem that I have with science is that science and the rigor of science is really being hijacked by corporate interests.
Mm.
And it's being hijacked by pharmaceutical companies and the medical establishment. So, you know, particularly with healthcare, when you start looking at scientific journals now, you really have to have heightened discernment because it's one thing to look at a headline and then to look at the science and go, oh, okay, this is great. But when you start scratching behind the surface, I mean, they've done studies on this now that if a pharmaceutical company is funding the study, it's 30% more likely to come out in favor of what the pharmaceutical company is looking for.
Mm.
You know, so there's that side of things. And of course, then you also get into the suppression of information.
Mm.
So, you know, you start looking at the world of vaccines, for example, is a good one where, you know, it's safe, it's effective, look at the science, look at the science. But it's like, but what about all the other science that were not shown?
Mm.
So you get this, you know, there's two sides to the picture here. One is the sort of blatant falsification of information is one. And the other side is only getting half the picture and the suppression of information. And I think that that's where, for me, the science with regards to medicine, it rubs me the wrong way. And at the same time, I also really appreciate it and I really love it. You know, it's a tricky one for me.
So I suppose it's like incorporating the good parts of it, but not becoming obsessed with it or not fixated on it.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. I mean, I find that, you know, I'm part of a lot of online forums and discussions and whatnot that are going on. And I find that some people will just throw scientific literature at you if they're trying to debate you. And I sort of take a step back and I'm like, I don't know. I mean, you look at The Lancet, which is one of the most prestigious medical journals on the planet, and the editor of The Lancet has come out and said 50% of the information in the journal is wrong. That's like published in the journal telling you that the journal is wrong, and we don't know which 50% is wrong. So, it's, you know, that for me is troubling. And as I said, I don't have a problem with science or the scientific method as much. I just have a problem with who's running the show. Really, I mean, GMOs is another great example. You know, back in the 90s when we first started really tapping into the negative effects of genetically modified foods, Monsanto was funding a lot of those studies. And anything that came up as being counter to what their agenda was, they literally would close down the whole lab. They would fire everyone. They would close down the whole lab. I mean, the first account of this was in Scotland.
Oh, wow.
So literally they said, hey, you know, we fed these rats, we fed them genetically modified potatoes, and they developed tumors in their small intestine. That's what our findings are. And they said, right, results done. We're never gonna publish them. All these scientists are fired. And this was a university lab, and they just pulled all the funding and shut the lab down. Yeah, I mean, that's a very blatant example, but one has to wonder, you know, if you're a scientist these days as well, it's very difficult to get funding to further things that have already been discovered. Everyone's looking for new things, right? You know, that we want groundbreaking studies, we want new discoveries, but there's not a lot of funding for people who are trying to discover more about existing discoveries. So if you're a scientist trying to pay the bills and feed your kids, to some degree you have to toe the party line, you know, and that's unfortunate.
And I think like these things can be quite frustrating when we know a little bit more about them, or we have experiences as healers or holistic practitioners where we can see that there's some really great advanced methods, but it doesn't necessarily correspond all the time to science, or some people wouldn't be open to it. Like, where do you find a balance in terms of, because I think it's tempting for people to go out through phase of there's a lot of anger, there's frustration at the way things are. Like, how do you balance that with
I mean, you know, for me, I think if you're if you're asking me to speak from a practitioner standpoint, mm. right? So from that standpoint, you know, there's a lot to be said for intuition.
Mm.
There's a lot to be said for intuition. And to be quite frank, medicine is the most inexact science that we have.
Yeah.
as much as people think it's very sciencey, it's actually, yeah, there's a lot of science that's being done, mm. but it's very inexact. I mean, unless you're talking about drugs that work on very, very specific mechanisms, mm. but what's the ripple effect in the entire body? I mean, the body is so complex and everyone is so uniquely different and so on that you're trying to put a square peg in a round hole. Mm. And it's sometimes going to work and sometimes it's not. So I think that for me, the happy place from my own practice is, one, I rely a lot on intuition.
Yeah.
So sometimes, you know, I'll just sit there and my intuition will say, you know what, this is what's going on right now. And I know it. And then sometimes my clients will say, well, you know, that's a little bit of a stretch.
Mm.
And that's when I say, well, look, if you really want to figure that out, we can run a functional lab test, because the labs have no agenda whatsoever. All they're doing is providing lab testing. They don't provide any recommendations. They've got nothing to do with your patients.
Mm.
And so then oftentimes I've started to see this happen a lot, is when I run the functional lab testing, the labs come back and they match my intuition.
Wow.
Which is kind of crazy sometimes. So sometimes I sit back and I'm like, whoa, that was like pretty spot on. But so I find that, and this takes time. I mean, this is definitely not, it's not something that just happens.
Mm.
It takes years, and it takes practice, and it takes sitting down with people and making the mistakes.
Mm.
That's really what it boils down to. And I find that the more, you know, you start to see patterns, you start to see similarities with people, mm. you know, once you've helped 100 people with, you know, X condition, you start to understand a little bit more. And mm. so you can sort of point to things and go, oh, you know what, it's probably this. But there's no way to fast track that. Mm. You know, it's just experience. So coming back to your question here about the sciencey side of things, I think that for me anyway, at this point, I find that there's a lot of conflicting
mm.
evidence. You know, the world of natural medicine especially, and medicine as a whole actually, there's always conflicting evidence, right? You know, one day vitamin D cures cancer and the next day causes cancer, and you just back and forth. So I tend to actually take a step back from that.
Mm.
And I, you know, oddly enough, I actually look to more of the old school. You know, my mentors and people that walked before me that are no longer here,
mm.
because they weren't obscured by science at that point. Because I think science in that, back in those days, you know, go back 100 years ago, sure, we didn't have the methods that we have now.
Mm.
And don't get me wrong, there's some amazing science that's coming out. But I find that for them, there was no adulteration. It was just like, hey, I've seen 350,000 patients and I've done this and I've done my homework and this is what works. So sometimes I fall back on that as well, you know, which is interesting.
Mm, of course. And I know you talked about earlier, I think you mentioned about sometimes a root cause of an illness could be relationships. And you've also mm-hmm. talked about like using your intuition to sort of say, well, that's probably the root cause of a case. Could you perhaps just give one or two examples where it's been telling you one thing and it's perhaps a little bit, it's something which a person wouldn't expect to be the root cause of their illness?
Yeah. So I'll see, hopefully I can answer the question. Hopefully I'm understanding it correctly. Mm. I'll give you an example, right? So I had someone who came in and they had a lot of stress.
Mm.
At the point, I didn't know what the stress was. But one of the things that I do in practice is iridology, which is looking at the iris.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trained in two different types. One is applied iridology, which is physical, and the other one is holistic iridology, which sort of looks at – I've sort of like done my own thing with that, where you start getting into chakras,
mm-hmm.
You start getting into Vedic psychology, and then they're all attached to the different organs of the body, right? And so one of the big things with stress is obviously the adrenal glands and, you know, your adrenal glands. So this woman, I mean, her adrenal glands were shot. She had menstrual issues as well, you know, so like irregular periods, if I remember correctly. She had painful periods. She had a lot of PMS-y kind of stuff going on. Her blood sugar was out of whack. So you know, all of this ties in with the adrenal glands and, of course, the ovaries. But when I started getting into it and I did iridology, I was like, well, look, I mean, I can see that the adrenal glands and the ovaries, those are the sort of two focal points. And which chakra are they housed in? Mm. You know, this is the root chakra and the sacral. And so the root chakra is really your, I guess it's your survival chakra, if you want. It's the base chakra. But the sacral chakra, which is one up, you know, it has a lot of properties, but relative to this sort of discussion, one of the big ones with adrenal glands is relationships.
Okay, yeah.
You know, so the sacral chakra has to do with water balance, which is why people with adrenal issues often have dizziness and lightheadedness because they have low blood pressure. Mm. But then it's the relationship side, and that's, and then I started doing, looking at the whole life history and the timelines and stuff, and I said, look, you know, I mean, you're doing everything else right. So the only thing that I can see here, and I think this is a major sticking point, is you and your husband are on the verge of splitting up here.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, like every day, this is what you're coming home to. This is what I'm hearing. Mm. So you're telling me, and I'm just spitting the information back to you and pulling some things together. And she got really upset.
Mm.
Sitter, you know, I was like, look, I don't know what to tell you, but I think at this point you have some big decisions to make.
Mm.
You know, are you going to work through it, or are you going to leave?
Mm.
And that didn't go down well, let me tell you that much. Like, and I knew when I did it, it struck a nerve, because she just lost.
Yeah.
And I didn't hear from her for a week, and I felt terrible. I was like, well, maybe I shouldn't have said that. But then she came back and she was like, you know, I'm sorry I lost it. Mm. And you were right.
Yeah.
I've had to think about it. I was just a little heated.
Mm.
And so I was like, you know, secretly.
Yeah.
But you know, happy ending to the story. She decided to work through it.
Hey, fantastic.
And, you know, so it worked out for her. But I've always said, you know, and that's just one example of many, right?
Mm.
If I were to give you another one, another one that's I've seen, is an environment where you're working in an office space where there's no natural light, and you're working with toxic people, and you're working in a high stress environment. So I had a woman that came in, that was her environment, and she was actually having trouble getting pregnant.
Yeah.
So she was having major fertility issues. She spent a boatload of money on fertility treatments and that, and I said to her, I'm like, you know, you need to get outside at lunchtime and like start getting some sunlight into you. Like, there's something going on. And so obviously, because it's fertility, we decided to run a full hormone panel, which is, you know, it's, I won't get into it, but it's a very accurate method for detecting hormones in the body and what's going on with them. And most of the hormones were fine, except her melatonin production was high in the day. So melatonin is a hormone that's responsible for our sleep cycle, right? So go figure, she also had problems sleeping.
Of course, yeah.
So when the sun goes down and it gets dark, that's when your melatonin goes up.
Mm.
And so for her, because the environment was dark,
it's going up.
Her melatonin was up during the day.
Oh,
and
wow.
I figured from that melatonin, elevated melatonin during the day will suppress ovulation.
Mm-hmm.
So you won't be able to have you won't be able to get pregnant.
Mm.
So what we did was we said get outside during the day. We supported a bunch of other things from a nutritional standpoint, but then I also got her to use what's called the bright light.
Mm.
So the bright light sits just off to the sort of side of your screen while you're working.
Mm.
You just need 15 to 30 minutes a day, and what it does is it basically tells your body that it's daytime.
Mm.
Your vitamin D production goes up. Your melatonin production goes down. And you sort of set your circadian rhythm a little bit better like that.
Mm.
And so, yeah, so that was her. And lo and behold, I mean, 3 months in, and she called me up and she's like, I'm pregnant.
Mm.
You know, so really wow. Didn't focus much on fertility at all. It was just looking at things a little bit differently. But, you know, and again, she didn't really change her environment in a radical sense.
Just tweaked it.
She just tweaked a couple things. Yeah. And that worked for her, you know.
Yeah, it's two examples. They're just beautiful examples of really looking at something from a deeper perspective, but also bringing spirituality or bringing other ways of looking at life, more holistic ways, bringing it into really, really practical context. There's nothing more beautiful than helping someone become pregnant or have a child they've always dreamed for. Could you just perhaps talk a little bit about bringing spirituality, I almost call it, into the real world? Because it is, it can be tempting for people who are on a spiritual path to become a little bit ungrounded and almost get away from normal life. But you're clearly someone who's embodying, bringing it into a very practical context.
Yeah, and I've traversed both ends of that spectrum for sure. You know, I find that when I was living a lot more, when I was living in the spiritual life, like a little bit more hardcore when I was younger, and I was only hanging out with spiritual people, you know, you start to sort of like walk a fine line between spiritual discovery and spiritual escapism. You know, because I find that a lot of people, and no offense, but, you know, I traveled with the hippies for a really long time. And and I find that for a lot of people, we discover these things and then we want to live in that world. And, you know, I mean, the world of psychedelics is a great example where people were using psychedelics to open a gateway. But then we want to live over there. And I've always said, well, look, you can't really do that. You know, if you live here in the 3D world.
Yeah.
You don't, you know, yes, you live in the spiritual world, but you sort of have one foot in the spiritual world and one foot in the real world.
Mm.
And I find that for a lot of people, you know, there's still this misperception that you have to be in one or the other. And spiritual people can't be successful or financially wealthy, or, you know, if you're spiritual, you have to be poor. And you have to live in the spiritual world all the time. And if you are, you know, a normal looking person with a job and you're making good money and, you know, you drive a Volvo, well, you can't be spiritual then, because that's not what that looks like. But, you know, I've as a musician, as a person who's traveled a lot, you know, I've done my fair share of psychedelics when I was younger. And I came to the conclusion really, really quickly that it served its purpose at the time, but all of the discoveries, the gateways that opened, the revelations that came forth from that, I knew that I had to apply what I had learned in that setting into the real world. And that's really the manifestation of true spirituality, as I find. And, you know, now I find myself not necessarily meditating 6 hours a day or, you know, drumming and running around a lodge. Like, I don't do that as much anymore, but I still carry that with me. And I find that now I live a life of service. I mean, you know, that's what I do. Like, I'm empowering practitioners and I'm teaching them to be better. I'm empowering my clients through education. I've taught thousands of students. So that's my life, you know, but it comes from a place of spiritual grounding versus, you know. And then, of course, you get the other side of the picture where there's the intellectualization of spirituality, where, you know, it's sort of like, hey, I meditated this morning and now I'm going to give someone the finger on the highway. You know, it's sort of like, well, that doesn't really add up either. You know, again, maybe that's a little bit blunt, but I just find as well that, especially in the health and wellness space, I think spirituality now has become very popular. And I don't think that, and again, like, no offense to anyone, but I think that there are a lot of people walking around where they're saying the words,
but
they haven't really jumped in with both feet, and they're not necessarily fully living that life. And it's fine. It's not a judgment thing here at all. I think the thing that kind of irks me a little bit is that it's then that gets extrapolated into marketing. You know, so now it's like I can use spirituality to get you to buy stuff. And I can use spirituality to get you to come and see me for my services, when that's not really who I am, but I know that it's trendy. And that's where I start to have some problems, you know.
I think for me, like, a lot of it goes back to, what do we actually mean by spirituality? Because you use a word like bandwagon, and what can often happen is people jump on a bandwagon, and then maybe people view it, some people view it, spirituality, one way, but then others take it and then it gets to mean something else. How would you define it? Not an easy question, but
it's not an easy question at all. I think that, you know, spirituality is in many respects an individual process, if you will. That's really it. I mean, nothing changes after enlightenment, right? You know, I've always said that as well. Before enlightenment, there's dishes and laundry, and after enlightenment, there's dishes and laundry. So, you know, nothing really changes. It's actually more your perception, the way you carry yourself.
Yeah.
That is really what changes. And that's also going to be heavily dictated and influenced by your environment.
Mm.
You know, so spirituality in the West is going to look different from spirituality in the East. It's going to look different from spirituality in Africa. And it's not to say that they are, you know, fundamentally different. It's just the expression is going to be a little bit different. Mm. And oftentimes the wording is different because your spirituality is being expressed in the environment that you're in, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, of course. It's like, I always view it, it's really an inner change. But because we're so outward focused, we always, there's this belief that I have to change something on the outside. Whether that's I have to change my, I don't know, environment, I have to change how much money I have. It's all a externalization of it. It's all like, how does it look? Where really for me, it's actually an inner function. And someone could be a successful business person, they could be a poor person on the street, but it's really about the inner vision, like the light they bring to a situation above anything else.
Yeah. I 100% agree. I mean, you know, for me, spirituality is not necessarily, you know, call it what you will. Anyone, you're free to put whatever label you want on it. But I think an important distinction to make, as far as I'm concerned anyway, is spirituality does not necessarily equal God.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. All right. Spirituality means yourself with your higher self.
Okay.
You're honoring your spirit. And your spirit, depending on what you believe, you know, you are a product of all of your ancestors that walk before you.
Mm.
You know, you are a collective consciousness of your entire lineage.
Mm.
So your spirit, your higher self is uniquely you, but it's also tapped into the universal consciousness, right? Which is our collective consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a difference between our individual consciousness or spirituality and our collective spirituality. And I think that really what it is it's a journey of self-discovery and self-development. And then being able to really bring that out into the world to shine. And, you know, you're going to naturally resonate with some people and you're naturally going to not resonate with others. And that's okay.
Mm.
You know, that's fine. Like, we're not all here to necessarily get along.
Yeah.
But I think that if we're tapped into something that's universal, we can at least start to appreciate that on a fundamental level, we're all the same.
Mm-hmm.
Biologically speaking, right? But there are subtle differences between us all. I mean, this is what makes us individuals. But these differences are not something that need to be fought about. These differences are something that needs to be celebrated. Because diversity, whether you want to talk spirituality or ecosystems or whatever, diversity gives us strength and gives us resilience. And so as a culture, as a universal consciousness, I think it's great that we have individual types of spiritual expression. I think it's in fact important, because then we start getting down the road of religion, you know, and I find that, you know, the religious side of things is just so overly dogmatic that people are not questioning what's going on anymore. And the books that we're worshiping, if you will, were written at a time that is not really relevant now. The time was completely different. So we sort of need, this is why New Ageism is becoming, so it's the new age. I mean, we are in the new age because the books that we built these religions and philosophies and ideologies on are actually outdated, if you really get down to it. So it's exciting. I find it's exciting. I mean, you know, we're all on the path together, but we're all on our own paths at the same time.
Yeah, so it's almost like that individual expression within the collective consciousness, which I feel is a really important distinction to make. We talked about this before. Obviously, you're someone you've been through various awakening experiences, and I feel at this time is, for me, it feels like things are speeding up, and a lot of like people are like, so I'm only 24, but a lot of younger people are almost coming on the path a lot sooner, and in terms of just the volume of people, there's also a huge more amount of people becoming interested in spirituality.
Yeah.
Just for those who are first starting on their path, is there any sort of advice you give them, like looking back at your own journey?
I think, you know, try lots of different stuff out.
Mm.
Expose yourself to lots of different things and you'll find what resonates with you. You know, yoga or, you know, Kundalini chanting or whatever, it's not for everyone.
Mm.
And one of the, I think, you know, speaking about my own experience, what was interesting is, you know, I've definitely looked at things like Kabbalah. I've looked at Buddhism, at Hinduism, like I've studied them. I wouldn't say I've studied them extensively,
yeah.
But I've done my fair share of yoga, you know, and not just yoga, like I'm doing the poses, you know, small groups where it's energetically you're doing yoga and you're really out there. And what I came to realize was that, you know, I don't think we've spoken about this yet, but I actually lived with the native community here for about 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
So in Canada. And the biggest sort of like aha for me being in that environment. So can you imagine, I traveled for almost 6 years. I had been to the northern hills of Thailand, to the Mekong Delta, lived with the Maoris, like all, you know, just like all over the place, all through Africa. And what I started finding was that a lot of the sort of spiritual disciplines are very ascension-based disciplines.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, they're geared to get you out of yourself.
I understand. Yeah.
So Buddhism is like that, like let go of the ego. You know, we're egoless, we're weightless, we want to be out there. And what I found was interesting was when I started working with the natives, it's very much descension based, if you want to look at it like that, because it's all earth based medicine and spirituality.
Yeah.
So here we are learning from our environment. You know, you're doing a sweat lodge and it's a bit, today it's a bear sweat.
Mm.
So what does the bear have to teach us? Well, the bear is all about courage. The bear is about, you know, and then the next day we're doing a ceremony all through the night and it's a thunderbird ceremony. Well, what does the thunderbird have to tell us? What does the cedar have to tell us? And so on and so on. So that was very interesting for me because I think that for people who are trying to get out there, there is that danger of escapism.
Yeah.
It's that fine line. And I found that really rooting myself into earth-based spirituality worked for me.
Mm.
It was just great because I got no problems getting out there.
Mm.
My problem is more grounding and staying focused so that I can do the work that I need to do. And so that I think, you know, that would be some advice to people is don't just lock on to the Buddhism or the whatever, you know, whatever's popular now.
Mm.
Try it out and see if it works for you. You know, I know plenty of people that it just doesn't work for them at all.
Mm.
You know, they go and they do whatever they're doing and they're like, I don't know, it's just not resonating, right? And that's okay.
Mm.
You can't force it. So I think that's probably my biggest piece of advice is to not try so hard down one spiritual path and really remain flexible in your thinking and sharpen up your intuition so that you can really feel out where you need to go.
Mm. I think it's so important just to, as you say, it's almost letting it emerge and you say not getting too fixated on one path. I also really like when you were talking about grounding it into almost the earth realm, because as you said, it's very tempting to almost go away with the fairies or get out in the universe. But it's also important we ground it and make it practical on our planet. Just one final question, because I know we're running out of time. Where do you see this holistic health movement going? Like, what's your vision for it, or what do you see?
I mean, look, the holistic health as a whole has become extremely popular.
Mm-hmm.
It was, and I'm talking like in a short space of time. Like when I was in school, it was not as popular as it is now. It has exploded. That's a good thing.
Mm.
Now, it's a really good thing. I think we need to go there. I personally think, at least from a North American perspective, I'm sure this is in the UK and a lot of westernized countries, I really hope that we can find some kind of middle ground where we have a conventional medical system that complements a holistic system as well.
Mm.
Because, you know, you can't throw both away. And I'm not going to get into, you know, just for time's sake, like I have my own beliefs and observations and research on pharmaceutical companies and government corruption and all of this other stuff.
Mm.
I choose to not really pay too much attention to it anymore. But there's a time and a place for everything. Mm. And, you know, if you get hit by a bus, don't come and see me. There's nothing I can do for you, right? Mm-hmm. Go to the ER. If you're going to, if it's a medical emergency, if you're having, if you're giving birth to a child and there's complications, okay. That's where Western medicine is great. I mean, if you have some crazy infection, you break your leg, Western medicine shines. That's where, and that's the correct application for that.
Mm.
But Western medicine is not very good at preventing disease.
Mm.
And it's not very good at treating the root cause, unless it's an infectious disease. Obviously, you can just take antibiotics and you're done. But even that doesn't work sometimes. So I find that, you know, if we're looking at a healthcare system globally that's slowly going broke, and we never be able to treat our way out of the chronic degenerative diseases that we have. You know, we're not dying of infectious diseases anymore. We are dying from chronic degeneration because of lifestyle, because of diet, because of poor nutrition, and so on and so on. And toxins is another huge one, the toxic burden. So I think that more people are starting to clue into that. I just don't know where currently, right now, there's massive backlash from the pharmaceutical and Western medicine towards natural medicine. It's like this all the time. And I think that the reason why it's like that is twofold. One is because they view it as a threat. So this might encroach in profits and whatever else. But the other side is it's not science-based. There's no evidence to show that it works. And so, you know, and this is used a lot when you start getting into debates online and stuff like that is, oh, there's no science behind it. And as I said earlier, well, if half the information in the journals are falsified and we're skewing results, well, where's the science? Like, should we really be relying on the science that much? But I think more and more people, the reason why it's become so popular is because they're starting to realize that it works. And they're starting to realize that there's no side effects, that from a holistic perspective, they're actually feeling their best. It's not just the eradication of symptoms. They're actually feeling their best. Where it's going to go, I mean, I foresee that it's only going to get more popular. I just don't know where natural medicine is going to land in the greater scope of healthcare. I'm not sure where that's going to land up. Because right now, I mean, there are agendas out there, government agendas and policy agendas that are happening where they're trying to strangle out a lot of the natural medicine. And if they're successful with that, then we are going to have severe restrictions in terms of access, in terms of scopes of practice. And then, of course, you know, that then furthers the medical agenda. So I don't know. It's a sort of loaded question, and I hope it works out for the best. I mean, I'm just doing what I can, and I know others are too. So,
yeah, of course. Yeah, thank you so much for all of that. And yeah, good luck with all your projects as well.
Okay, thank you. Cool. Yeah, so we'll be in touch over email, okay?
Yeah, we'll. Cool. Cheers, Brett. Thank you.
Okay, cool. Thanks, Jack.
Have a good day. Bye.
Take care. Bye.